In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
I'm the Mighty Manfred with you in Little Steven's Underground Garage, and this coolest conversations throwback is an interview I did with Tom Petty on March the 18th, 2016. Our coolest song in the world at the time was Somewhere Under Heaven, which was recorded during the Wildflower sessions and had recently been used in the Entourage movie. We talk about those recording sessions, some of his early career days with Mudcrutch and their reforming, and we also chat about his producing the band The Shelters and his love of the Zombies. Let's give some of Somewhere Under Heaven a listen now, and then I'll be back with Tom Petty on your coolest conversations presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Jenny's father was a working man. He worked hard to be his best. In the middle of the afternoon, he would give little Jenny a kiss.
This is the Mighty Manfred, and I am so honored today to be speaking with Tom Petty. Hiya, Tom. How you doing?
Oh, man, ain't nothing to it.
Well, we just took a listen to Somewhere Under Heaven, which got released, I know, as a single last year, but it's a much older song. It goes back to 1994's Wildflowers album. Can you tell me about all the rest releases coming up?
Yeah, that's way back when we made Wildflowers. I think it was in 95 or 96, Rick Rubin and I had intended that to be a double CD. In the end, the Warner Brothers, thought it would be better to go with it, because it was quite long, and they thought it would be better to go with a single CD, so we did, and that went very well. And recently, we kind of dug out the old stuff that we hadn't put out. And when you get all that stuff together that we recorded, there's another nice record there. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to release that. I don't know exactly when they're going to release it. They put Somewhere Under Heaven came out early because it was in a movie, Entourage, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so they put that out. But the album, it's pretty cool, really. I enjoyed it a lot. It's amazing that there's that much stuff there is what really got me.
So it's not going to be issued like a reissue of Wildflowers, like it's a two CD thing, but it's just going to be a standalone record, just Wildflowers, all the rest?
I was going to let them do whatever, but the record company came back and said, no, we want to release this as a standalone record. So there you go.
Well, we've been playing The Shelters here a lot in the Underground Garage, their track Fortune Teller. It's a former coolest song of the week. And their EP was produced by you. Are there other bands you've been working with recently we should know about?
I haven't had the time recently, but I love doing their record. It's great getting to work with young guys like that. Catching that kind of energy is really good for me. And their album is coming out, I think, in March, and it's really great. They have an EP out at the moment, and
right,
they're coming with an album.
You know, a lot of times folks will complain to me, oh man, there are no good bands anymore. And I'm like, you guys are crazy. There's tons of great stuff. And maybe it doesn't have access to the top of the charts, but there's lots of great rock and roll. What do you think the state of rock and roll is?
Hey, there's lots of good rock. It just doesn't have the platform it needs, you know. It doesn't have a big stage like it once had. But, I mean, I listen to you guys, your station, all the time, and I'm constantly amazed. You know, some young band will come on that's fantastic, and I've never heard of them before. And it's out there, you know. The music's out there. You just got to find it. I mean, if you go see the Shelters play, you'll go, damn, you know, the rock is alive, you know. And I hear it all the time, really. There's something, but they just don't get, you know, they don't have as big a platform as they once had, which is sad. But I think the more, you know, people learn about it, the more they like it.
I agree. We got to keep them listening to the Underground Garage as well.
You know, I listen to it all the time.
Yeah, well, as you should. I appreciate that. It's you and my mom, man, definitely.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's great.
So, you know, we think of, like, influences for you, or Dylan, Burrs come to mind, but I found out you wrote a foreword to a Zombies box set that came out, like, in the late 90s, and really cool stuff. You're talking about the Zombies. Remind me, how do the Zombies figure into your music world?
The Zombies, they hit me very early on in life. It was either, I think, probably around 64 or 65, and in the thick of the British invasion. I was 13 years old. And the first concert I ever saw, the Beach Boys were the headliners, and there was probably 10 other bands on the show. The way they did it back then was you'd just come out and play the two hits you had and get off stage, and then somebody else would come out. It's really much better than today when you think about it. But so they had an intermission, and coming back from the intermission, the Zombies opened up. And I had never imagined a group could be that good live, you know, and it made a big impression on me. So I made it a point to try to keep up with their records, which was hard because they only made one album, and then it was all singles after that for a long time. And then they made that masterpiece, Odyssey and Oracle, in 1969. And broke up. But it's interesting that you mention them because I saw them perform not long ago here in L.A., and it was four of the original five. Their guitar player passed away, so they had a new guy on the guitar, but they performed the entire Odyssey and Oracle album, and it was a religious experience, you know. They were really, really good. So if they're around, you should definitely see them.
You know, years ago, Little Steven did a tour with Little Steven's Underground Garage, or Go-Go, and there were several different swings. And one of those swings, I played in a band called The Woggles, and we got to a tour with the Zombies. And, you know, when you are meeting, say, your heroes, you know, it's like, well, they're human beings, and they're going to have whatever personality they have. But I have to say, it was so wonderful that those guys are as amazing in person, just very down to earth, plenty of humility, and just really great people, and always happy to talk about whatever, you know, their career, or it was just a really special time.
I find that to be true of most people that are good, you know? Like, when they're actually good, they don't really have to put on any airs.
But, well, that is that's a great correlation, I think, man.
I think I know it to be true. You know, they are very down-to-earth and humble, but fantastic musicians.
Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers comes out back in 1976. Was there any confusion from New Yorkers at the time? I mean, did anybody from New York say, hey, what happened to Johnny Thunders?
No, we heard about it finally. We didn't know, you know. I don't think they made records at that time. So we didn't know, you know. And it was never really a big issue, though, because I think the other group kind of came and went pretty quick. So, no, we didn't have a problem with it, but we honestly didn't even know about it.
So the debut album's on Shelter Records. The Dwight Twilley Band was on there, but also Mudcrutch.
And that Mudcrutch single was a Depot Street back with Wild Eyes that came out on Shelter, and that was Leon Russell's label.
Leon Russell and Denny Cordell were partners that had that label, and it was a very cool record company that was in an old house in East Hollywood. And they had, you know, J.J. Cale and Freddie King and the Dwight Twilley Band and us and, gosh, you know, lots of people. They had Phoebe Snow. I can't remember everybody right off the top of my head. But, you know, it was hip artists. And there was a very kind of nurturing scene there. They had the Shelter studio. And we could record there for free whenever the studio wasn't being used. Oh, and that left us in the Dwight Twilley Band, you know, waiting outside the door every day to see who could get the studio, you know. But we became good pals, and it was a great, healthy environment to kind of learn what you were doing to make a record.
So Mudcrutch, you guys reformed in 2007 after some, how many, like 30-plus years. Why did you guys decide to get back together?
Probably just because we could, and it seemed like so much fun. You know, we've all stayed close. Tom Ledden, the other guitarist in Mudcrutch, and I go back to our teenage days, and we played in bands together. You know, right? He actually played in Mudcrutch until, I don't know, the early 70s. He decided he was going to come out to California, and he came out to California and started playing with Linda Ronstadt. And the drummer is a guy named Randall Marsh, who's a fantastic drummer, and I play the bass in that band like I did back in the old days. We just made a new record that's going to come out in late May or early June. I think it's June 10th, I think. But it's the second Mudcrutch album. It's called Mudcrutch 2. After a lot of thought, we came up with that.
You guys tour with
it? We're pretty excited about it, and we're going to go on the road. We're going to go to the East Coast, even, and we're going to play all over the place.
Well, I want us to take a listen to your version of Shady Grove off of the first album. But before we do that, I want you to give your SiriusXM channel a plug, right? It's Tom Petty Radio's over on Channel 31.
Yeah, that's over on Channel 31, and that plays every kind of thing I've been involved with. It plays Mudcrutch and Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers and my solo stuff, the Traveling Wilburys. We play excerpts from the Buried Treasure Show, where we might play an artist that we just dig and influenced us. And we also have the show itself. The Buried Treasure Show is over there as well. We've just started doing an interview show called Tom Talks to Cool People. We've got that coming up soon. Our first guest is Mickey Dolenz of the Monkees.
Oh, great. Wow.
And we had a lot of fun with him. And lots of little things, you know. Different band members are going to have their weekly hour. And we're trying to do something over there that hasn't really been done with an artist specialty channel. You know, yeah. I wanted to have a lot of variety. So, and we're pretty hands-on with it. So it's cool. And, you know, it's exciting, really. The whole satellite radio thing is a new frontier. And I love it. You know, I mean, it's like I am addicted to the Underground Garage. I mean, I can't be in a car and not listen to it because it just covers such a wide spectrum of music that I like, you know. And making the connection, say, to blues to garage rock is really important. And, you know, maybe there's some young garage rockers that don't know Howlin' Wolf, you know, or that kind of stuff. But that's really where it's coming from, you know.
Right.
I came out of a garage band in the 60s, and if I look at our set list, you know, we were covering the British Invasion, which is basically blues.
Yeah.
And so we were playing this kind of weird white boy blues calling it rock and roll, you know.
When you were playing the White Boy Blues, I mean, that was on the basis of, hey, hearing the Rolling Stones do these songs.
Yeah, and the Animals and the Kinks, right. And that's them, you know. All that stuff is based off of blues.
Right, and so that was your introduction then?
We loved the Beatles, but we weren't nearly that good, you know. We couldn't sing like that, you know. And that was true of most everybody, and it was cool because that was the music on the radio as well, but it was just a wealth of knowledge, because the English sort of brought us back our blues heritage with more energy, and sold it to the youth of America, and then that turned you on to, like, who's Chuck Berry, you know, and then you'd go find him, and like, wow, look at this. Tradition goes on.
When did you find out about Chuck Berry then? I mean, at what point were you listening to Rolling Stones?
I know exactly where that was. Roll Over Beethoven on the second Beatles album was written by Chuck Berry, it said. And at the same time, I got the first Rolling Stones record, England's Newest Hitmakers, it was called, and it had Carol by Chuck Berry. And then the next Stones record had Around and Around by Chuck Berry. And then I just went and got me a Chuck Berry record, and it blew my mind, you know. So, you know, hopefully that's a tradition that still goes on. And with the internet now and the availability, we never had near. In the 60s, you sort of only knew really the songs that you owned, which was, we didn't have the dough to listen to everything. You know, you'd borrow one from your friend, or you'd drive to some guy's house and ask to borrow his record, you know. But today, you know, you have access to really everything that's ever been done is out there, so find and enjoy.
What was the name of you mentioned being in a garage band back in the 60s. I'm guessing that was in Florida and in Gainesville, is that right?
Yeah.
What was the name of the band?
The Epics.
Oh, man, that's a great name.
The one that played the most. Before, I was in one called the Sundowners before that.
But and you were the playing Epics, bass in those bands?
I played bass, yeah. I played bass right up until Mudcrutch broke up the first time. And I didn't play guitar in the band until the Heartbreakers got together.
Very cool.
So now I've got to learn to play and sing at the same time. You know, it takes a little practice, but it's coming back to me.
Well, Tom, thanks so much for talking to me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Thank you for calling. And keep on doing what you're doing. I'm listening to you out here, and my buddies are. And we love what's going on over there. So rock lives, man.
You got it. Let's take a listen now to Shady Grove. Here is Mudcrutch in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Shady Grove, my little love, Shady Grove, I say. Shady Grove, my little love, bound to go away. Cheeks as red as a blooming rose, eyes are the prettiest brown. She's the darling of my heart, sweetest little girl in town. Shady Grove, my little love, Shady Grove, I say. Shady Grove, my little love, I'm bound to go away.
In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.